Welcome to Transition, Gadgets 360's gaming podcast, where we discuss all things games. Now, in today's episode, we are going to be talking about the Epic Game Store, because there have been some developments concerning Ubisoft. A bunch of Ubisoft games will probably be going there instead of other platforms. So now, The Division 2 is going to Epic Game Store. So to talk about all of these things and to praise Ubisoft and Epic Game Store, we have Games Editor Rishi Alwani.
I think it's beyond good and evil right now to say that we'll be praising Ubisoft, but I guess you see what we did there.
All
and
right.
Friend of the podcast, Mikhail Madnani.
I mean, I'd praise Epic Mega Games for sure. About Epic Games, like, remains to be seen.
Epic yeah. Mega Games, didn't they make like Gears of War?
I don't know about
and
that.
Jazz Jackrabbit.
Yeah, they made Jazz Jackrabbit, Jill of the
and
Jungle.
And Lawbreakers. Oh, wait, wrong company.
Wrong company, yeah.
Okay, I'm your host, Pranay Parab, here to give you a blast from the past via certain games later in this episode. So first, let's talk about this Epic Game Store. Well, it launched recently, I'm aware of that. Yeah, and there has been like a massive polarization online. There's like a huge vocal minority which is screaming every time there's any announcement related to Epic Game Store. So yeah, what is happening?
So here's the thing. It goes beyond China, spyware and Tencent. Long story short, unless you've been living under a rock, Fortnite is the world's most popular game right now. And Fortnite uses Epic's own launcher, which they've morphed into something called the Epic Game Store. And it launched, the Epic Game Store launched, I think, in December.
The Game Awards.
Yeah, at the Game Awards. It was announced prior and it was launched at the Game Awards. And their plan was to obviously start with PC, then bring it to Android. And they have grand ambitions of bringing it to iOS as well. Their logic is devices that have multi-use, that aren't just specifically for gaming, i.e. non-consoles. They should allow users to have their choice of what they want to install and how they want to install. That's the underlying philosophy behind it. And I know for some of our listeners, this might sound alien, but in India, there was that phase where a lot of, where on the Android platform, you had multiple storefronts coming in. You had Mobi Genie, you had Amazon's own app store.
Yeah, that was Mobo Genie.
My bad.
Yeah.
And you had like other players as well who came in trying to get people to, you know, get their apps from other sources. And that's the underlying philosophy here. The thing is, while every other competitor prior didn't had basically a fraction of Epic's funds, Epic has the funds and has the wherewithal, along with the developer support, to actually make this a real thing. And when it launched, there was, as Pranay said, right, there was a vocal minority, and a lot of it has to do with the fact that 40% of Epic Games is owned by Tencent. A lot of it has to do with the fact that right now, if you look at the global scenario, there is some form of stigma in Western markets. Let me emphasize there, Western markets. There is some form of stigma attached to anything that has a Chinese brand, because of their own political reasoning. While that's not the case in India, let's make that also very clear. So now, obviously, that's why you have people thinking it's spyware. However, Tim Sweeney had gone on Reddit and did say that the only reason why their terms of service may allude to that, it's because Epic has its own subsidiary companies that look at the data that comes in through the Epic Game Store.
But like the funny thing is, a lot of the people who are like, you know, like or whatever, scared, or like they're just saying that, you know, why would you trust the Epic Game Store with your data and all? You're using Windows 10. Like, have you looked at how much data that collects from you and what telemetry and all that stuff is there, which gets reset every time you do an update, unless you're on Windows 10 Enterprise or like probably using Android, and we all know how much data.
Yeah, exactly.
Or even like smart TVs now. So like,
forget that. Like, I actually find this holier than thou attitude taken by certain, you know, people in the Western market to be like really, I guess, you know, in a way, not fair, discriminatory, because it's not like American companies all have like a great track record when it comes to privacy, right? Just look at Facebook, look at Google.
Yeah.
So many companies which you use on a day-to-day basis, whether it's via Instagram, WhatsApp, or whatever it is, you know, all of these have a pretty horrible record when it comes to like user privacy. So why single out a Chinese company in this?
So I think it's more to do with the fact that whenever like another store launches, or like when games go to multiple stores, a lot of the vocal minority, or at least a lot of people are okay with it, because like the stuff still shows up on Steam. And like it's funny, because the same people who keep cribbing about how console gamers find console exclusives problematic, where, you know, they say just buy another platform, like over here you can't even install another icon on your desktop and like just buy a game from there or whatever. And the funny thing is, Epic is actually like getting developers to release stuff which was console only on PC through this, because Journey from Sony and that game company was on PlayStation 3 and PlayStation 4. It's a Sony owned thing also. It's coming to PC now through Epic, through Annapurna Interactive. This likely would have never happened if it wasn't for this. While Sony has in the past published their own games on Steam, like Everybody's Gone to the Rapture and Helldivers.
Yes.
Journey was like, no one expected it to ever show up on anything except for this. Although Flower did show up on iOS. Again, thanks to Annapurna Interactive's partnership with Sony for getting that game company projects to iOS. Over here, it's like, whatever. And the thing is, Epic is actually giving a lot of people free games by just signing up and all. And these aren't like, you know, free for like a month or something. It's free to keep. So what they are doing is they are getting people who are interested in indie games to get on their store. And also, hopefully, they want to convert part of the Fortnite audience to this. Like, I can't imagine a future in which they won't have a tie-up with Fortnite, where suppose the Division 2, when pre-orders for like a deluxe edition or something, when we are closer to release, they do something with either the Division 2 or with other AAA games, where if you buy the Division 2 through the Epic Store, you get X number of V-Bucks or you get something in Fortnite. This is like, Valve has done this in the past also, where if you bought FF Type-0 on Steam, you got something in Dota 2, a launcher or something. Or if you buy certain games on Steam, you get stuff in Dota or in TF2. So they've done this in the past. I can't imagine why Epic wouldn't try this, because that'll immediately get people interested in this, and there'll be people, like, I remember people who just bought Final Fantasy Type-0 just so they could sell that Dota item. Or even Okami, when it came out, they had some tie-up with Capcom for items in their other games. So this is only a matter of time for them to do this. And the reason why the Epic Game Store is in the news so often is because, like, obviously the Division 2 ditching Steam for the Epic Game Store is like a very, very big deal. But before getting to that, is because they're actually rolling out refund system, regional pricing, and they have been over the last few weeks. And regional pricing is very important for a region like India, because a lot of people, for them, it's like make or break. They'll either just not buy the game officially if there's no regional pricing, or like, if regional pricing is there, they'll end up buying it. But at least in India, to combat Steam, there's like a very high task, very uphill task, I should say, because Steam has like a ton of Indian payment systems, and they've tied up with, I believe it's Nodwin.
They've tied up with Nodwin's allegedly sister company, NovaPlay.
Okay, yeah, NovaPlay, so, for like Paytm and for like cash on delivery, yeah, and all that. So there's like very low barrier to spending on Steam through that. But on Epic Games Store right now, while they have started regional pricing, there aren't that many games that do it. But the fact that they managed getting Ubisoft to do it with the Division 2 directly on Epic Games Store, like, you already have matching pricing for what AAA games from Ubisoft cost on Steam, it kind of shows that they are a bit serious about this.
And then also, it's important to note, and yeah, it's probably a moot point now, is the fact that Ubisoft getting at least 88% of the revenue versus Steam 70. And on a game like The Division 2, which, I mean, most of Ubisoft's games on Steam do hit the bestseller lists. We saw that with Far Cry 5. We saw that with both Assassin's Creed Odyssey and Origin. So for them, obviously, that 18% difference, where, because you're 88% on the Epic Games Store versus 70% on Steam, does make a huge difference for someone like Ubisoft who operates at scale. But what's also interesting here is Ubisoft could have ditched Steam altogether and not even done anything with the Epic Game Store, because they have Uplay, which is their own client.
And Origin.
And and Origin as well. They even do stuff on Origin. So now the point is, and that's what I find fascinating here, because they could easily ditch everything and just go Uplay exclusive and still be okay. Because even if you look at their revenue, I think this is something Mike and I were talking about late last week, was that only, I think, around only 10 or 15% of Ubisoft's revenue. I think, sorry, 15 or 18% of Ubisoft's revenue came from PC. The rest was console. The rest was older consoles. The rest was like, and I think like 7, 8% was Switch alone on the basis of one game, which is Mario plus Rabbids.
17,
sorry.
Let me, going to bring up the chart, but for Ubisoft, PC isn't that much of a big deal. Like, for them, their PC revenue is nowhere near what it is on PS4 plus Xbox combined, which is why, at least in the past, they used to bring up, there was a time when Assassin's Creed and Watch Dogs would be on PS4 and Xbox a few weeks before they used to launch it on PC. Although now they've become much better with that, doing day and date releases for the most part. For them, like, it wasn't a question of why you ditch Steam for Epic, more of why Ubisoft isn't just going all in on Uplay. Because to buy Ubisoft games anywhere outside Steam or Origin, you only get Uplay keys. If you buy a collector's edition, you get a Uplay key. If you buy physical copies, whichever region still have those, it's just Uplay keys. So the only way they were actually making money on Steam is if people bought it through Steam. And the same applies to Origin. So the fact, and what they used to do is they used to try and be competitive by keeping their price a little higher in terms of discounts on Steam to incentivize people to go in on Uplay. But I don't know how they're going to handle it with the Epic Game Store, at least because so far we haven't seen any outside retailer selling Epic Games keys, and I don't know if that's going to become a thing in the future, but that's definitely something that's important, because a lot of people just buy like PC games from GMG, Humble, or they buy them from cdkeys.com, and right now, as far as I'm aware, you cannot buy Epic Game Store keys from there.
Yeah, and I mean, the distribution aspect aside, there are also some interesting learnings on how Epic's going to go about this, because it turns out that one of the people behind the Epic Game Store, Sergey Galionkin, he has a Russian podcast that found its way on a Reset Era. Mad props to the OP who translated it.
And he also, like, for those who aren't aware, he is still responsible for SteamSpy.com.
Yes.
And was working on it and basically was super useful for giving out, approximate numbers for a lot of games which no one had any idea about, because like I believe you're not supposed to reveal your sales figures. There's like some This used to basically it used to crawl through or trawl the public Steam profiles and look at which accounts had certain games and give you an approximation of those sales numbers. We had that recently for PS4, at least through the trophy and that
My PS Life.
Yeah, through My PS Life, that European, the video thing which was there. So right now, Steam Spy, because Valve closed one of the APIs or something like that, it's not as accurate as it was. But at the time, it was really accurate because a lot of indie developers also said that, yeah, these line up approximately with what we see. So that's basically what Steam Spy was.
Yeah, so anyway, so Galionkin has this regular Russian podcast. And it turns out that one of the episodes was a summation of one of the episodes is put up on Reset Era by one of the members, Daxi, who speaks fluent Russian and decided to do a full transcript, or rather more than a transcript, just the points of what's important here. And how does this tie into distribution? It does into a ton of ways, because for one, Epic doesn't believe in curation the way Valve does. There isn't a bestsellers list or anything of that sort. Instead, Epic plans to use a word which Pranay really loves and adores and cherishes, called influencers. So the logic is they'd use influencers and get influencers to essentially spread the good gospel on their games. And the influencers get a cut of pushing the games, like 5%. In addition to this, the keys generated for influencers, Epic may not take the usual 12% cut, may take less, may take more. And all of this ties into a very interesting situation where Galionkin believes that the bigger publishers like Ubisoft Ubisoft, Activision, whoever decides to come on board, they won't spend probably more than 5% of their earnings on getting users through influencers. But on the other hand, they expect indies to part with 20%. Now, when you actually think about it, and you think about the context of Tim Sweeney saying 88% to developers. Well, yes, you'd be fine giving 88% to developers, because the developers will need to spend more to market their games on a storefront where discovery is handled through off-store indirect means. And that's the other, and that was one interesting facet of that podcast. The other interesting thing was the fact that, according to Galionkin, 60% of people who play Fortnite had Steam installed, but they don't use it regularly. So obviously they're trying to tackle a younger audience where, you know, they're all on other platforms, but the main platform to, but the storefront to actually figure out what to buy and what to play. Now, all of this is interesting because it essentially, to me, in my mind, this sets up the Epic Game Store to be a quintessential survival of the fittest situation. And again, when you're in that situation, it's going to be quite tough for indies to break out. And honestly, it also then begs the question that, fine, you're giving people 88%, but that's it. You're on your own. And it's going to be fun to see what comes out of this. What was also interesting in this entire discussion, which Galionkin was having, was that Epic wanted to jumpstart the creator economy, covering 5% of creator revenue sharing for first 24 months. So basically what this, now here's the thing. If this is taken to be the first 24 months of the store's launch, instead of the first 24 months of a game's launch, then the developers will be losing their share for a cut of the sales after the first 2 years on the store. So it's a very interesting situation, because it just seems like, to me, it just seems like a more hyper-evolved version of what Microsoft tried to do with the Windows Mobile Store, where they help people port, where they got people to get their act together, and, well, it didn't work in the end. But then here it seems to be run by smarter people. And I don't know how that's going to work in the long term, because I think that 88% will reduce very quickly for a lot of people. I don't think Epic is going to subsidize creator revenues for 24% or for 24 months of a game's life. That's not feasible. They'd probably do it for the first 2 years of the Epic Store. That's it. And again, a lot of this to me is also disturbing, because the entire game plan seems to be primarily dependent on how well Fortnite does. And if that tanks, yeah, it's lights out.
I don't think it's just dependent on that. There's a lot of uncertainty, I'd say, right now. But what we need to wait on is for the indie developers that did launch their stuff through the Epic Game Store, how sales were approximately for that. How are they happy with it, or what's happening? I still think it's too early in the store. It's too early in the life cycle for the store, because refunds just got put in the Steam-like refund system. It's still not automated, which they want to do that. So I'd say we still need it, whatever. It needs some time before you can judge anything. But yeah, of course, they are going to bet on how it all depends on Fortnite, because if Fortnite's popularity starts fading, less people are going to want to use the Epic Game Store on PC. So I don't know what, either they're using this as a backup plan or something, or if Fortnite fails, if more, because dude, Ubisoft being over here means it's serious. Before that, I thought, okay, they can get devs on board by signing whatever checks they want and all. And I literally never thought Ubisoft would be one of the AAA developers to do this. And they're doing it with The Division 2. The Division is their biggest new IP this generation.
No, I would say Watch Dogs is bigger. But
then Watch Dogs also on last gen. So, yeah, so I'd say current gen biggest new IP is The Division.
Yeah, pretty much. I agree.
And them doing it. So what I see eventually happening is Ubisoft will look at their more games as a service focused titles, and they'll be open to bringing that to the Epic Store. I still think that titles like the next Assassin's Creed might end up being on Steam if required or whatever. I know that a lot of people will be really angry if Assassin's Creed ditches Steam, because I've seen people post this long screenshot of their every Assassin's Creed game on Steam, and then suddenly the last one is not going to be on Steam or something. So, but yeah, I'd say need to give it a few more months to see how this plays out. But yeah, a lot depends on Fortnite basically. But then we need to not forget that they have another ace up their sleeve, I'd say, which is Unreal Engine. A lot of devs use Unreal Engine. What if they give you incentivize the devs who use Unreal Engine on PC?
They're already doing that.
No, I mean what if they incentivize it more? Dragon Quest XI is one of the flagship Unreal Engine 4 titles of this year. That's on Steam and on PS4, and it's gonna come to Switch also using Unreal Engine. What if when Dragon Quest XII, how many ever years later that comes out, Unreal, or Kingdom Hearts 3 also, it's not on PC yet, it's an Unreal Engine title. What if?
There's no what if.
Yeah, so I'm just saying these are all things where obviously Square Enix, now that decision lies with Disney and Square Enix more than anything. But these flagship Unreal Engine AAA titles, they need to get those onto their store, I'd say, somehow.
Yeah, and I don't think it's going to be a problem, as Mike said, since they're willing to play ball with Ubisoft. It's just a matter of time. But what's also interesting is that coming back to that the Galankin's findings, apparently, on one of his podcasts, the co-hosts were from Tiny Build, publishers of the Hello Neighbor games. According to Tiny Build, Steam only made up the smallest share of Hello Neighbor's sales. And the game was a 2017 release. And in fact, most of their sales were from direct sales through their website. And when they started giving out Steam keys, they apparently got bombarded with questions on what to do with them. Their audience skews younger, and for that reason, they thought the Epic Game Store would be a good fit. I mean, that's cherry picking to me. It just seems like a fair bit of cherry picking. But I mean, if they're able to build a business case for it, why not? But I don't know. I do think that there is an audience beyond Steam. Yes, I do think that the Epic Game Store has its place. But at the end of the day, particularly if you're someone who only looks at AAA games, it's also kind of ridiculous, because regardless of you using Steam or using Epic Game Store, particularly in the case of The Division 2, you're still going to need Uplay. So
yeah,
what's the point?
Make sense for you to I still think Ubisoft is doing this, and Ubisoft also says they said we believe in Epic's philosophy and stuff like that.
Yeah, the exact term was, and I quote, we entrust Epic to deliver a smooth journey for our fans from pre-ordering the game and enjoying our beta to the launch, said Chris Hurley, Vice President of Partnerships at Ubisoft. Epic continues to disrupt the video game industry, and their third-party digital distribution model is the latest example and something Ubisoft wants to support. Man, that 18% goes a long way.
So I think, like, Ubisoft's thing, it's obviously, like, they get everything through Uplay anyway. Even if you buy it on Steam, you buy it on Origin, you still need to use Uplay and all. But I still think that this is their first step in Ubisoft slowly ditching Steam. Because if they can get, if the percentage of buyers which they had for their games on PC, which was already, like, small compared to the console versions, if it is actually, like, not as high as people think, then, yeah, this is the first step in Ubisoft ditching Steam.
Okay, so beyond this, do you want to, like, talk about, you know, some of the, like, other games that could make it here? So, yeah, I'm pretty sure, like, we were talking about fighting games that are coming in the future, which
yeah.
may or may not make
and,
it to Epic
And, you
games
know,
store.
Those fighting games actually use the Unreal Engine in some degree. Gee, I wonder
yeah,
which one we're talking
a lot
about.
A lot of fighting games actually use the Unreal Engine. In fact, Unreal Engine basically saved AAA gaming in Japan for the most part, if you think about it. Tekken, I believe Ace Combat also uses Unreal Engine. Soul Calibur is on Unreal, I'm pretty sure.
Yep, so basically...
Dragon Ball FighterZ is Unreal.
Yeah, Mortal Kombat 11, which is also Unreal.
Shin Megami Tensei 5 is Unreal. But yeah, Mortal Kombat 11 is the... quote-unquote surprise announcement from the Game Awards. I say surprise because it's been leaked multiple times. We've seen multiple leaks both before and after the announcement. Even the box art was leaked. Shao Kahn's render was leaked. The edition, at least one of the editions was leaked because obviously Warner Brothers isn't just going to release a standard $60 game anymore. There's going to be like a premium edition, and I assume they'll talk about some collector's edition because every Mortal Kombat game gets a collector's edition. Collectors yeah. with a K. So, basically, what happened is Mortal Kombat 11 has a big reveal, which is happening. It'll be a few days from now or like the tomorrow, depending on when you listen to the podcast. The event is on Jan 17th.
Yep.
We're recording this podcast on Jan 14th in the
yep.
morning.
Yep.
So there's going to be a big community reveal where they'll show gameplay and they'll likely reveal the editions. Although GameStop Italy did leak the one of the editions, which is the premium edition, which has a steel case and it has the combat pass or the fighter's pass, which gives you the first batch of characters. And obviously they're going to do more than one because it's Mortal Kombat. So yeah, like when Mortal Kombat 11 got announced and it's coming to PS4, Xbox, obviously, because those are the main platforms for fighting games. And it's also coming to Switch and PC. PC through Steam, it's already up for pre-order in India and all. Warner Brothers hasn't put anything on the Epic Store yet.
Yeah, but my point is, if let's put it this way. If Epic really wants to turn the Epic Game Store into something, for the lack of a better term, Epic, they'll need something like this on board. And, considering how fast they've ramped up features, right? Like, we've already got regional pricing. We've already got a really good refund policy in place.
Yeah, it's similar to the Steam refund policy,
yeah, it's,
right?
It's just like right now it's not automated.
Yeah.
Someone needs to approve it. But yeah, the restrictions are the same where it's like 2 weeks and 2 hours
yep,
and
yep.
stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, but tell you what, the scale of the Epic Game Store right now is like small enough that it can afford to be manual. I'm pretty sure they're working on something to make it automated
they've
in
said
the back
that. End. They said they're looking to make it automated.
Yeah.
And I think that's interesting to see because essentially they're going 1:1 with Steam.
Yeah.
And now all they need, if someone from Epic Games is listening, all they need is a big picture mode and I'm there. I'm like there. But what's also fascinating with all this is their plans for Android. Because they do plan to release their own standalone storefront for Android. And why this is interesting is because it brings Pranay and me back to the days of the multiple app stores on Android where you'd be sideloading a lot of stuff just to see what was there. And now because it's Epic doing it, it'll be interesting to see if they have any processes in place to prevent rogue APKs, to prevent any drama. And more importantly, it'll be interesting to see if Epic actually has any safeguards in place to prevent any rogue APKs from showing up. More importantly, and this is something Epic has stressed on in the past, is they already have the tech for crossplay and cross-progression. They've already done it with Fortnite. Now, I wonder if they're going to incentivize the possibility of users actually using crossplay or incentivizing developers to do crossplay for Android and PC. That would be fun to see.
I mean, they already said, right, like they want to bring their cross-platform tools to everyone and they want to open their cross-platform tools to everyone, which will make it easier for devs to do their things on PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, iOS, Android, PC, and Mac. So yeah, they already are looking into bringing that. So it remains to be seen how it works, because there are a lot of indie games which do come out on mobile platforms, while the Android release is usually later, if at all, they come to iOS. But yeah, like there could be a situation where you buy a game on the Epic Game Store and you get the Android version free for certain indies and stuff like that. Like this Hello Neighbor Hide and Seek, I believe, is either on, it's coming on mobile or it's on, I have lost track. But I know the original Hello Neighbor did show up on iOS and Android recently. So Hello Neighbor Hide and Seek, you essentially could get the Android version free if you buy it on the Epic Game Store. So they could do something like that. There's a lot of stuff they can do, basically. And it remains to be seen how this plays out. But yeah, they are ramping up the feature set on a rather quickly, I'd say.
I think all of this means that it's actually, despite a lot of hue and cry about changing the status quo and how a lot of gamers are unhappy with Epic Game Store coming to the ecosystem because, you know, it challenges what Steam does. I think it's great because moves like this bring more people back into PC gaming. Because at the end of the day, if you look at the scene where we're in from, if you even consider the hardware side of things, the pricing has been pretty much garbage tier for most of last year. We're seeing some, particularly on GPUs, particularly on memory. Now we're seeing a change there. We're seeing more competition, which only results in, I mean, we're getting free games, man. A year ago, if you told me that we could get Subnautica for free just by signing up for a service, people wouldn't even think that's possible. So I think it's a good place for gamers. All in all, at least this is at least better for the PC ecosystem, and it gives Valve a reason to care. I mean, parallelly, what we've seen is that in the last few months, Valve's been reacting to stuff like this. They've changed their revenue share for certain developers. They've made Counter-Strike free to play. And hey, guess what? One of the lead writers for Half-Life 2 is now back at Valve.
Mm.
Gee, just come on, Gabe. Press the button. We know Half-Life 3 is ready somewhere.
Yeah, it's going to be like some lore buried in Artifact Advanced level when you pay like $500 and then like have spent 2 years in the game. You'll unlock Half-Life 3.
Yeah, dude. But at least it's a thing. So yeah, I think now we should move on to Pranay's favorite section of the podcast, what we've been playing this week.
Yeah, Blast from the Past, where I've been playing Chrono Trigger. So now I've spent like 3 hours in the game, and I restarted the game like 4 times because there was one stage, like in the initial stage, you enter that fair and over there, there's like some lost cat. So to get that cat back to its owner, so I kept accidentally tapping the cat twice and the cat would run away. If you tap the cat once, you know, the cat would follow you and you can take it back to its owner. So I finally rescued the cat, and well, it sort of paid off because, you know, later in the games, or you, first of all, you go back to like 600 AD, from 1000 AD, you go back to 600 AD, and then over there you rescue that queen and all that. I finished that boss fight, everything, and after that come back to present time, and that Princess Nadia was missing, who's actually Marle, I don't know how you pronounce it. Anyway, so she was missing, and like there's the Chancellor, sort of some evil guy who tries to hold a trial against Chrono.
Spoilers for a 20-year-old game.
Yeah, well, so in that trial, no matter what you do, you sort of end up going to jail. So at least in the trial, you know, that girl whose cat I saved, she came and said, "Huh, he's not a bad man. He saved my kitty and he brought the kitty back to me." And that sort of helped me get a not guilty sentence in there. And no matter what you do get convicted. So I sort of waited there and played that whole escaping from the jail stage, and like took on a dragon tank in the end. And finally, like, there was no way for like things to end peacefully over there, so had to escape the castle. And then now I have reached 2300 AD randomly, thanks to Luca's gate. So fun fact is that I thought Luca was a girl, but turns out Luca is a guy in that. And so far enjoying the game. Story is good. Combat and all is also quite fun. Now I reached the stage where I've started unlocking all these combos thanks to getting lots of tech points. And well, the Frog Knight is also amazing. That dual strike combo where like,
too
you know,
OP, man.
Yeah, dual strike combo is the best thing to happen to me. Like, I keep using it all the time. And also, like, I've realized that, you know, in Chrono Trigger, even though it's like a 20-year-old game, some of the combos are just epic. Like, there's one, I'm still like way too early in the game, so I've not unlocked most of the good ones, but there's one called Fire Whirl where like Luca sort of puts a flamethrower on, and like this one, Chrono has a cyclone going, so that deals some unreal 926 damage if it lands properly. So yeah, that's like just crazy. So enjoying that a lot. And now just like waiting in 2300 AD, like I've reached the first dome. Apparently when you go outside in the world map over there, your HP starts declining and it goes down to 1 because the environment is damaged or something in 2300 AD. So yeah, now I'm at that level and will be playing more. I think still there's a long way to go. If I'm not mistaken, in this game you can go like to the end of time and back to 65 million BC or whatever. So yeah, looking forward to all of that, but enjoying it so far. Even though it's on iOS, which I'd complained about earlier, yeah, the port is actually pretty average, let's
don't
say.
You have an iOS controller? Just use that.
No, I don't. Nah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Someone's supposed to gift me one. My birthday was like in the last podcast episode.
Mike.
Okay.
Anyway, Mike, what have you been playing?
Forza Horizon 4. Winter has come and gone since the last podcast. Yeah. Because every week they change seasons and stuff like that. And I decided to just check the timed events to see how they've actually been, because the game launched a few months ago. And while I like obviously own the DLC and all, I was like not going to bother with that, because at least with Forza Horizon 3, the moment the Hot Wheels DLC showed up, I stopped playing the main game and I just started doing this and spent all the time completing it. So they've actually done it really well, where you have like seasonal barn finds, seasonal events, seasonal races and all, where you can like even replay some of the older things with, obviously you have to like tweak your car and you have to change your car because you like can't use some of those super fast cars in the winter, just skid off only, like it's not feasible and all. So been playing a lot of that. Did some of the showcases which I left for the from the initial like initial period when I played the game and all to try out now and all. They're still a lot of fun. And after that, I was like, let me still just check out how Forza Horizon 2 is, because that's the first Forza Horizon game I played. And yeah, like from 2 to 3, it wasn't so much of a jump, but like having played 4 for a lot of time and then going back to 2 on the Xboxes, like yeah, it's Forza Horizon has come a long way and all. Kind of wish they'd do Xbox One X patch like they did for the original Forza Horizon, which is really good. Like the stuff they've done on that, it actually almost feels like an early current gen game with the patch. So it's been interesting seeing how that is. Probably going to continue playing Forza Horizon 4. The only thing is like the initial load into the game is super slow on Xbox. So yeah, basically that. Also been playing Animal Crossing New Leaf on 3DS. Just booted it up randomly. The town is full of like random garbage and also have to like clean up right now. But
so what happens basically if you stop playing that game for a while, the town goes whatever?
Yeah, basically the people who live in your town get angry because like you're supposed to like talk to them and stuff like that, and your approval rating goes down in the town, so you can't build your town until you get people on your side again or whatever. So while you can keep like upgrading your own house and all that, you still need to build the town, so you can't do that until you reach like an approval level and stuff like that. So yeah, basically just that.
Okay, cool. Rishi?
So I've been playing the Resident Evil 2 one-shot demo a couple of times, because if you have multiple PlayStation accounts, you can just play the same demo over and over again, which is pretty cool. So I've been playing replaying sections of that. I mean, yeah, I can like it's easy to finish the demo in like 5 minutes if you know what you're doing. So yeah, I've been playing that, and it looks really good, plays really well. We have a detailed breakdown on the demo on our site. You can check it out there. In addition to that, I've been playing Resident Evil 2 again, but on the Vita, which is basically a re-release of the PlayStation 1 game. And you can tell that there's a massive, massive sense of difference, and not just obviously from visual cues, right? But not only from just the visuals, but obviously, but then even with the way certain aspects of the game are treated, like the introduction of certain monster types. In the original Resident Evil 2, they were done in a very understated fashion that actually heightened the tension. Here, they're much over the top, in your face, and kind of, I wouldn't say cheapen, but give a different, more, you know, hey, this is a cool monster, look at it vibe, versus there's a monster that's going to probably kill you if you're not careful.
Are there any jump scares in the game?
There are a couple. But what to me, at least with the OG Resi 2, the jump scares aren't the problem as much as the controls. They have a tank control scheme, and even though you can use the analog sticks, they're highly okay. It feels a little clunky, but then that aside, what I really liked is that the design holds up. So in the original, you'll be playing as either Claire or Leon. And even in the new game, you'll be playing as Claire or Leon, and depending on which one you choose first, you get access to the second. You get access to another scenario of the next player. So, for example, if you play Leon first, you get access to Claire's B scenario, and if you play Claire first, you get access to Leon's B scenario. So there are A and B scenarios for both, and the replayability is pretty cool from that aspect. That holds up quite well. The exploration holds up decently, and all in all, it's just very cool design. It's basically a glorified maze, but it's with zombies and rocket launchers. So yeah, it's quite fun. So I've been basically playing a lot of Resi. That's what I've been doing.
Okay, then I think that's all the time we have on this episode of Transition. We'll be back next week, or maybe last week, or maybe in the far future with more talk of Chrono Trigger.
Who knows? We might just be an Epic Game Store exclusive on the next podcast.
Yeah, who knows? Anything can happen. So that's all the time we have. That means, you know, we'll be back with one more episode next week. In the meantime, if you use any apps to listen to podcasts, then please, please do one thing. Rate us, review us, and subscribe to our show on these apps. This helps us a lot. The music for this episode comes by Magnus Olai Paulsen, whose album PPP is where the tracks are from. And finally, I would say that you please follow us on social media as well. Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram. We are at Gadgets360. Thank you so much for listening.